the fate of the 49ers without Jimmy Garoppolo, how the Rams have become even more unstoppable, monster upsets by the Bills and Lions, a record day for Breeze, and Mahomes keeps doing his thing. It was a wild week three, and we're breaking it all down on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are through a week three Sunday, and this was a wild week. This was one of those fun weeks, Andy, where it's everything just got sort of turned upside down a little bit.
It did, yeah. It's just a leveling of the standings. I mean, we're down to how many undefeated teams now? Four, isn't it? Is it only four undefeated teams?
Oh, gosh, I didn't even look that up for the show. I will say
Chiefs, Rams.
The Chiefs, the Dolphins, of course, the Rams.
Yep.
And at the moment, the Bucks. We'll see about that after Monday night. We can't see that far into the future. But, it was we're actually going to start off on a down note. We have been fairly fortunate with injuries, knock on wood, this year, especially through the preseason, through the first 2 weeks. We haven't lost any real superstars at this point. And maybe this guy's not a superstar, but out in Kansas City, we're starting with the Chiefs' victory over the 49ers, and Jimmy Garoppolo goes down with what is believed to be, or I should say at the moment, feared to be a torn ACL. The 49ers can't compete without Garoppolo. I don't know. What's your troubleshooting solution here, Andy?
I think it's game, set, match for their season, but you can't, if you're Kyle Shanahan, you can't do that. You got to go to work. You got to show up. You got to play and try to win the games. You and I can sit here and say they're not going to, but they have to think how can we try? CJ Beathard's the backup. I would imagine that's the first place you look, because he's been there for 2 years now. At least he knows the scheme. What Shanahan needs is a quarterback who will run the scheme the exact way you want it run, because that's their only prayer. So I know some people have suggested, well, sign Kaepernick, and we could debate, Kaepernick hasn't played in 2 years. We could debate what he is now, but let's say you're getting the Kaepernick of a few years ago. That the playmaking style of quarterback, there's a place for that, but it's not here in San Francisco right now. They don't have a good enough defense or running game to complement that kind of QB, so they have to win through scheme and design. They have to hope to out-coach people. And so you need a quarterback who is an extension of a coach on the field. I mean, Josh McCown type of guy. So if they see someone out there, Tom Savage is someone I thought maybe you could reason as that. But, Beathard, I don't know if he's a good enough passer to roll with, but it has to be someone like that. It's got to be somebody that can run the plays, even if he's not the most talented guy.
I mean, can you check in? It's on like Sam Bradford at this point, assuming the Cardinals are going forward with Josh Rosen.
Cardinals wouldn't do that. They wouldn't trade to help their division rival in the middle of the season.
Well,
even though the Cardinals are sinking.
I was going to say, if the Cardinals are ready to cut bait on 2018 here, and they can get a draft pick for the dude.
They wouldn't. I mean, they look terrible through three weeks. They're averaging less than a touchdown a game.
Well, I was going to say, we'll get to that later in the show, the issues of the Arizona Cardinals. But I will say, if you want to really look at it glass half full with C.J. Beathard, beautiful throw for a touchdown that was taken off the board on a pretty bogus offensive pass interference call on his only throw today. So that was kind of nice. But yeah, they're I don't know. Just looking around, I don't know if anyone who would possibly be on the market really really fits with what Kyle Shanahan is going to do.
Because those kind of QBs are signed by now. They're locked up. I mean, there just aren't good players sitting out on the market. I mean, they could sign Dez Bryant to play quarterback. Is that what people are thinking? There just aren't any named guys out there.
You got to get creative. When I say on the market, I mean also the trade market. I mean, you could, presumably, let's say you roll for 2 weeks with Beathard and maybe a sneak out a win, but he doesn't look impressive. Then maybe you can find someone who's ready to quit on 2018 and move a veteran bridge type of quarterback. So,
if you're the Niners, how much do you spend to do that? You've had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
You don't have a great cast around your QB. It was fine when you had the Garoppolo. But if now you're plugging in Joe Blow quarterback and the supporting cast isn't very good, are you trading a third-round pick? You'd probably do that. I don't know if you would you trade a second-round pick, though? I mean, do you draw the line somewhere because you have to look at this long-term?
I mean, and that's kind of the thing. Everyone has the urge to do this because of what Foles did last year, but, I mean, this 49ers defense is nowhere near what the Eagles defense was a year ago or at the moment. Their offensive line isn't as good as what the Eagles had. Maybe it's a lateral move as far as the weaponry goes at the skill positions, but, I don't know. I think you just roll with C.J. Beathard, and unless it's a complete disaster to the point where you're going to go 1-15 this year or something like that. I think you just stick with the guy who was already there.
I don't disagree with you. I think that's your best chance because, again, it comes down to who's going to run the system best, and Beathard will have been in the system longer than anyone they sign or trade for.
The other side of the coin here, Patrick Mahomes did it again. This is getting a little bit out of hand at this point. Now, this was, as we talked about on the Deep Dive show, generally a similar defense to the one he saw week one with Gus Bradley's Chargers defense. But, last week there were so few third downs in that game for the Chiefs. And you kind of said, maybe if you put him in some third and eight, some obvious passing downs, maybe you can figure something out here. But the Chiefs, en route to putting up 38 points and having 35 at halftime, they'd end up 7-for-11 on third downs. One of those non-conversions was a 14.5-yard gain on a 3rd-and-15, and then they converted the fourth down. So, this thing is not slowing down.
It's not slowing down. They've got too much speed, literally, for it to slow down. And it's not just vertical speed. They can beat you deep, but the way they're designed, they stretch you horizontally as well, which gives more opportunities for beating you deep. Tyreek Hill going left and right across your screen. The other thing they've done really well, and more teams are doing it across the league, is they put four receivers to one side and one to the back side. So it's called flooding the field when you put three receivers to a side. I don't know what you call it when there's a fourth. And a lot of defenses are not equipped, especially zone defenses. Mm-hmm. They're not equipped to defend that. And they get to it in a lot of different ways. They did it with Kareem Hunt last year, and they've only expanded on that. This right now, Gary, is as smart of a designed offense. And there's another offense in the NFC we're going to talk about next. The Chiefs and I'll just spill it, the Rams, right now they're doing stuff with designs that are just cutting edge, and the league has not caught up to them yet.
Well, let's go out to L.A. The Battle of Los Angeles goes to the Los Angeles Rams, 35-23 over the Chargers here. Andy, another just really impressive day for this Rams offense.
They've punted 5 times this season, according to Reed Foster, our researcher. 5 punts on the season right now. And so kind of jump off of what we just talked about with the Chiefs, what the Rams are doing that the league is totally behind on right now is changing the strength of the formation pre and post snap. In other words, they're using a lot of jet action, jet sweeps, and they're either handing it to the guy because they want to make you have to defend it, or a lot of times they're not handing it. They're just running their regular plays off of the jet action. And I'll tell you a little story, Gary. I spent this offseason watching a lot of run defense. In fact, I watched almost only run defense all offseason. I wanted to learn some parts of it from the ground up. And you get a really neat perspective when you start at level 101, even if you know that stuff, and build it in a certain order. And one of the things that stood out that I asked coaches about after a while is when you have pull blockers or ghost reverse guys, somebody change going from one side of the formation to the other side, even if he doesn't have the ball, especially when he doesn't have the ball, the more I learned about run defense, the more I realized that does a lot of terrible things for the defense. And I ask coaches when I'm learning this stuff, why aren't we seeing more of it? Why doesn't everybody run man-to-man blocking with pull blockers or put a ghost reverse guy or a jet action guy somewhere? Because it totally screws with a run defense's responsibilities. And every coach agreed, by the way. Said, yeah, I was only watching with defensive coaches. They said, we hate it. I'd love to ask an offensive coach, why aren't you doing it more? Now, McVay is doing it more, and what he's doing, and this is what Shanahan understands as well, which is why we're saying they got to have somebody that can run the system properly. The systems are smart. What they do is they understand your run defense rules, and they design pass plays that exploit it. So they say, if you play your run defense correctly, our pass design will beat you by making you play it correctly. And that's the whole name of the game for the Rams right now. They're killing. That's why they play action games so good. They're killing people with it.
They are. Another double-digit win here, and it just seemed like they were going to do whatever they wanted on offense. You made the point in your extra point column, which you can obviously find on the mmqb.com if you would like to read it. Andy wrote about the Rams and their overwhelming sort of path to the NFC West title, it looks like. They're actually handing the ball on a lot of that jet motion, though, which I feel like that's it's so unusual to see that. But they do it again, not frequently, but much more often than it seems like other teams do it.
Cooper Kupp gets handoffs, Brandon Cooks gets them, and Robert Woods gets them. The reason they do that, I'm sure they believe it works. For one, it's that jet action's hard to defend. But for two, is they want that thing potent. They want the threat of the reverse to the receiver to be respected because they're banking. Remember, when you're doing jet action, in some ways you're sacrificing an eligible receiver because that guy that's running the jet sweep, he can only go so many places off of that. He's not going to run a 9 route off of a jet sweep. So you're kind of limiting parts of your designs, which means you need the defense to react to the design exactly how you want. And if they do, you'll be fine. And so far, they have. And they'll keep handing that ball off, even if it doesn't gain yards. And my guess is it'll gain less yards as the season goes on. But you want to keep doing that because the defense, you need to make the defense honor it. The other thing is eventually it makes defensive ends and edge guys play slow. And when they play slow and you're an outside zone running team, that's a huge advantage. And so Todd Gurley benefits a lot too. Their offensive line is aided because they get easier angles to their run blocks because the edge defenders are being slowed down by the jet sweeps.
We had talked all offseason. What would the Rams roll out next to keep this thing evolving? And we've gotten our answer, at least in the early season here. But
absolutely. It's that. And they've got this NFC West. I mean, I don't say this kind of stuff often, Gary. It's over. It's over, isn't it? The Cardinals aren't doing anything. The Niners lost their QB. The Seahawks are going to look great one week and horrible the next, and this is a great week for them. But I don't see anybody competing with the Rams in the NFC West. I think they'll lock this up probably the first week of December.
Yeah, I mean, look, the only scenario would be like a golf injury, which obviously would be very sad. But even if golf went down, I mean, the defense has been good enough. They have the short week this week. We're going to miss it on the deep dive show. We're not going to talk the Thursday nighter just because there's not enough of a lifespan of that game preview for our Thursday morning show. But they host the Vikings on Thursday night. Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib both went down with injuries today. Talib was an ankle. Peters, when he first went down, it's all conjecture. It did look bad, but a lot of people were thinking Achilles. It looks like it's not that serious, but both those guys, to turn it around and on the short week, they might be without both of them. So maybe you get into something a little more of a shootout for once this season for the Rams. The Chargers kind of, they kind of kept pace a little bit. The game wasn't quite at a point where it was time to turn it off. It was a one-possession game at halftime, but this Rams team is just a little too good for the competition right now.
Do we want to talk about what the hell happened to that Vikings team that they play on Thursday night?
Yeah, let's talk Vikings real quick before the first break. I mean, first of all, this ruined a lot of knockout pools. This was I didn't put the time in to confirm this, but I believe this was the first 16-plus point favorite to lose since 1995 when the Cowboys lost at home to the Heath Shuler Redskins. to lose games straight up.
I believe you're correct on that. I heard that as well. This is the biggest upset. I read it. Why did you write? I read it. I didn't hear it. I didn't read it from you.
Oh, you didn't read it from me. No, good, then. Yeah.
No, it's been verified. I read it. I read it elsewhere. But this is the biggest upset by those standards that the NFL has had in about 25 years almost. I think you just chalk it up as one of those days, don't you? I mean, what's so bizarre is the Bills are so bad on their O-line and the Vikings are so good.
Yes.
And you don't think about D-lines having a tough day because that's not a timing and a rhythm thing. There's not as much communication. I mean, there's some. But usually if the D-line's way better than the O-line, they line up and kick the crap out of the O-line, and it goes that way every single day. D-linemen don't tend to have an off day. But they must have today, because if they didn't beat the Bills on the strength of their D-line alone – that's it. I mean, that's an overwhelming favorite for the Vikings, and nothing came of it.
It really was. And look, Brian Daboll ran out some pretty creative things, both in the run game and then Josh Allen made some plays. He also he made sure to mix in a couple of boneheaded plays in the second half to just sort of remind everyone that he's still a rookie. Josh Allen was pretty spectacular in the first half of this game, though, and he is really, you know, it's. We talk about the Seahawks all the time, sort of the Russell Wilson factor. Is Russell Wilson going to have one of those Russell Wilson games where he basically puts an offense on his back and carries it? That's kind of what Josh Allen did in the first quarter of this one, with the help of some good play designs. But, yeah, I mean, the Vikings really did not get anything up front early on in this game. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of turnovers. This one was out of hand by halftime.
Yep, that's why you gotta love the NFL. I mean, I would never have guessed this one's coming, but we say every week you can't. The bad teams are good too in the NFL.
You do say that. I was actually thinking that as I watched that and watched my knockout pool entries die in early death. One other thing on this game. The one other thing I wanted to say on this game was this is now two times in the past four games that the Vikings have had something of a dud. You could say maybe three if you throw the Packers game in last week. I mean, that's a game where they had to come back from two touchdowns down. If not for that controversial penalty, they might lose that by a significant margin. But I don't know. Is it time to worry a little bit about the Minnesota Vikings?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't go that far yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we move on here, you know, only with NFL Game Pass can you replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. We're coming off a wild week of amazing games. We had Baker Mayfield breaking the Brown streak. The Bills catch the Vikings by surprise. Mahomes again. Breeze and Matt Ryan put on a show in Atlanta. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay all of those games from every angle. There's a broadcast version, commercial-free. There's coaches' film, which shows the all-22 angle the pros and coaches use. That's what Andy and I watch all the time. And then there's a condensed games that let you watch a game in about 45 minutes. Remember, with NFL Game Pass, it's game time anytime. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/MMQB10 things. That's NFL.com/MMQB10 things. Game on. All right, let's go to the other shocker of the day for some people, not for me, because I am expecting to see the Lions in Super Bowl 53. But the Sunday nighter, the Lions looked like the team I thought they were going to be, at least offensively. We finally saw this. This run game get going, although perhaps it was aided a little bit by a tremendously slow Patriots front seven.
You know, that's a great point you bring up, is that Patriots front seven, they're very good along the D line. They've got some good two gappers. We've talked about Malcolm Brown before. Danny Shelton has not done much, but he's a talent, so let's give him a benefit of the doubt. And then Lawrence Guy has been sensational, at least he was the first 2 weeks. But those linebackers for New England do not run well. They are slow, one-dimensional players. Even a Landon Roberts, who we like as a lightning bug type of linebacker, He's a lightning bug when he's got a straight line from point A to point B. He's not a multi-directional movement type of guy. And Hightower's not that as good as he is. Juwan Bentley, this new guy, this fifth-round rookie who seems to be kind of becoming their number one linebacker, he's very similar to Hightower. So they're limited there. Matt Patricia knew that. We talked about on the deep dive, we're going to love this game because we're going to see the things that Patricia doesn't want done to his defense. They're going to do that. The two things Patricia did, and it was, I think it was more about exploiting specific guys for the Patriots, is one, they got the ball on the perimeter by design, often throwing to their running backs to do that. That makes the linebackers have to run. And number two was a lot of bunches and switch releases, which that's we called that one because the Patriots have trouble in man coverage, passing off assignments at times, and the Lions on third down especially, they aimed to exploit that. I thought they did a pretty good job, and their defense obviously did a very good job tonight.
Yeah, the Patriots were obviously a little bit shorthanded in this one. Trey Flowers being out basically erased any sort of pass rush that they had. To me, it was just all – there were so many plays where a running back was out on the edge and it looked like a linebacker had the angle, and it just – those linebackers just move in slow motion. You know, Kerryon Johnson's wonderful. I think the guy's going to be a star, but, he was having a field day out there, and, of course, he broke their ridiculous streak of not having a 100-yard rusher. So night all around for the Lions here.
Getting Patrick Chung back, Patrick Chung, when he's healthy, that'll fix some of the linebacker speed.
Yeah.
He's basically, he does not play safety for them. He plays linebacker in most of their packages.
Yep. Overall, I mean, are you worried about the Patriots? I mean, like you said, Chung comes back. They'll get Eric Rowe back for some more depth there. They'll get Trey Flowers back, presumably, at some point soon. And then they get Julian Edelman coming back. Josh Gordon will get up to speed at some point. It just feels like, as usual, they're building toward November, December, January, although, you don't want to give away too many losses here.
They'll be fine. They're going to get Edelman and Gordon in the lineup at some point. In about 2 weeks, they'll have them both, and it's going to be a 100% different offense. They just don't have wide receivers right now. They had three guys active at wide receiver in this game, so they're very limited and they're limited wideouts too. It's Patterson and Dorsett are strictly outside guys. So is Hogan, and he has to play the slot right now.
Yeah.
They simply don't have wide receivers. It's a temporary problem because they're going to have Edelman and Gordon soon.
All right. Well, I'm getting back on my Lions bandwagon. This was what I thought they'd be the first couple weeks of the season. So.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like a coming of age, kind of a team finding its identity. This was a hallmark win for them. And it's Matt Patricia's first win, so maybe that's part of it. But this was a hallmark outing for the Lions.
Very nice win. All right, before we move on, I'm guessing a lot of you are like Andy and me, overworked, busy family life, little time and or desire to grocery shop or cook. Well, let me tell you about HelloFresh. There's something for everyone. You can choose from classic, veggie, and family, and not only will you find something that pleases the picky eaters at your table, but you'll feel confident when cooking with HelloFresh with the simple recipes outlined on pictured step-by-step instruction cards. No more spending big bucks on takeout, and you won't spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take about 30 minutes. Maybe best of all, once you're subscribing to HelloFresh, you'll find yourself spending less time meal planning and grocery shopping each week, and you'll get that time back to do more of what you love. It's been wonderful for me and the wife, between getting the kids to soccer or piano or taekwondo or whatever is taking over our lives at the moment. There's so little free time, and we don't want to spend it shopping for food or preparing a meal. HelloFresh is great for us. It's convenient, it's fast, it's affordable. The kids will actually eat the meals, and it's so idiot-proof that even I can do it. What more can you ask for? We have a special offer for a total of $60 off. That's $20 off your first three boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/10things, 10things, and enter the promo code 10things. Again, 10things. It's like receiving six meals free or up to 50% off three boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/10things and enter promo code 10things. All right, Andy, let's go to one of the sadder stories of the first 2 weeks, the Giants at the Texans. The Giants, they turned this around pretty nicely. Houston still has issues, though. Do you want to – well, I'll ask you, Andy. Do you want to start with the sad story or the happy story here?
Let's do happy. Let's go happy and talk Giants. Talk their right tackle situation with Chad Wheeler in there now.
I understand. I understand Eric Flowers is pretty bad. And I understand he is very much in the spotlight because he was a top 10 pick, and when top 10 picks are busts, it's a thing. It's just, I don't know, man. It's almost like, you feel for him a little bit just because it feels like there's no way he'll ever, live down being, not better than the undrafted second-year guy who just filled in for him today.
Yeah, and that undrafted second-year guy was not great either, by the way. J.J. Watt ate his lunch a few times. J.J. Watt looks like J.J. Watt right now. He's looked like that the first 2 weeks of the season, and then especially today he started getting some sacks and making some pass rush numbers. He is a fascinating guy to watch. I was telling you how he's learning about run defense and gap rules. The more you understand, the more you realize J.J. Watt has a lot of artistic freedom in that scheme. And more often than not, it works for him. Every once in a while, they'll get beat on it. He'll get out of his gap or someone won't cover the gap for him. But that is very every once in a while. Most of the time, he dominates. And he dominated Wheeler at times today. But the Giants as a whole, their offensive line did look better.
Yeah, it did. Watt ended up with 3 sacks today, and those were his first sacks in more than 2 years now. It was September 2016 for his last ones. But yeah, Chad Wheeler at right tackle, it just, things actually functioned in the Giants offense, and I think that's what was so exciting about what they had going today.
They've got a lot of skill position guys. Now, what about, I'm befuddled by Houston. I'm going to write about them this week, as you know. And thank you, by the way, Gary. Mark Moravec did not want me writing Houston, and you came to my defense, and I get to write the Deshaun Watson story. Am I allowed to say that, or is that going to get edited out here? Is that,
no, now,
that too
now
much
it,
behind the curtain? Moravec doesn't like the Texans story. I think it's fascinating what's going
Moravec
on with the Texans.
Moravec has an anti-AFC South bias. He wants to
That's
write about the Bears.
That's
an awfully
specific bias.
Bears and Steelers. That's all. Now, well, no, he has a bias against the other 30 teams. He only wants Bears and Steelers every week.
That's unfortunate because they played in week 3 a year ago. So a year ago today they played. So he's going to have to sit and wait a couple more years on that.
That's why
the Bears upset the Steelers in Soldier Field last year.
That's why he's been so bitter ever since that. Got nothing to look forward
to. Well, here's what I find fascinating about the Texans is we just said J.J. Watt looks like himself. Clowney and Merciless do not yet. So that's a factor. But I like their run defense. D.J. Reader, Brandon Dunn, it's a better version of the Patriots style of D-line in terms of stopping the run and what they do. I think it's a good defense. That's what I'm getting at. Offensively, I think Deshaun Watson has looked pretty good. Now, he's not looked great, and he was not very good in week 1, so we're talking inconsistency still. But relative to where he is in his career, let's remember how young he is, and given what they've got at offensive tackle, I mean, they are really deficient there with Rankin, their rookie, starting at left tackle. He moves like a guard in some ways. Mm-hmm. And then Julian Davenport at right tackle, who had 4 penalties today. Given that, I think Watson's running the offense very well, and he's always a better thrower than I expect. I think his arm is better than people in my business, people like me, would tend to imagine. His throws are better than his throwing motion. That's what it is.
Okay.
And yet they're 0-3. That's what I find weird, is that they're too, if you'd said before the season, hey, Watson will be playing pretty well, he'll be throwing the ball well, he's running around, and J.J. Watt's going to look like J.J. Watt, no one would have guessed that the Texans would be 0-3.
Well, like you said, it's been inconsistency, but they've started really poorly in games. They had a string of I think they had 3 straight 3-and-outs between the first and second quarter after an opening drive field goal. They started really slow in Tennessee. They were down 14-0 until the last minute of the first half. They started slow in New England week 1. So I don't know. Does it feel at all like they're kind of the scripted stuff just doesn't really work because they don't have the talent, especially on the offensive line, and then it doesn't start. They don't start moving the ball until Deshaun Watson has to do a bunch of out of structure, sort of, you know, superhumanish things.
Yeah, that's fair. Their offense has taken place out of structure a lot. They didn't have wide receivers in there who could win initially, and then Will Fuller got healthy, so they got a little better there. But a lot of their plays, I'm thinking about that DeAndre Hopkins touchdown against the Titans last week, a lot of their plays come out of structure with Watson extending it. So you're right. It's a great point. It's not an offense that's functioning on very many cylinders right now. I also thought they'd use a little bit more misdirection stuff in their scripted plays. That has not been a defining staple. They've actually been more of a deeper drop-back play-action team at times. So they're still searching for an identity, which is a little bit surprising. I guess overall, though, the tendency would be to think that, well, what's wrong with Deshaun Watson? And what leaves me still optimistic for this team, and they're two games out in the AFC South. Let's not, even I know they're 0-3, but let's not get carried away. I'm still optimistic for them because I think Watson, his body of work, I think he's playing well enough. They've just got to get things clicking around him, and he's part of that too. But I would not rule out the Texans. This is not a team as bad as its 0-3 record suggests.
Yeah, it's a you know, there's also something to be said for you missed that time with the ACL. It's still very much a work in progress, and you know, like we talked about last year when they sort of completely blew up what they did offensively and rewrote the whole playbook for Watson. You know, they were going to evolve, and I think maybe the timing of that evolution got thrown off a little bit with the Watson injury. But let's go to Saints Falcons here. This was the this was probably the most exciting game of the day. It was the most exciting game of the day. I'll stick with that not particularly hot take. This was a shootout. I'll start with the Falcons here. More injury problems. Ricardo Allen has gone down now. So they were already without Keanu Neal for the season. Deion Jones is probably going to miss a chunk of time here. Ricardo Allen went down, and after he went down, they stood no chance at stopping that Drew Brees offense. So I don't know. It's sad because I think the Falcons have really figured it out on offense now. I know we said that a couple times last year, but I feel like they really have now, and I don't think this defense can stop anyone.
That Ricardo Allen injury, that's a big, big deal. That's it's a game changer.
It's ridiculous because he's a real good player.
Yeah, and we said with Neil, like, oh, you hate to lose that, but Ricardo Allen, he's so flexible in coverage, and he's gotten so good in the scheme, they're equipped to survive it. He was playing both safety spots for him. He was playing strong safety and free safety, not at all at the same time, although at times I think he could do that. He's a really improved player, and now he's out of the equation. I remember Steve Spagnuolo told me this once, and I met him at the when the Super Bowl was in New Orleans. It was the Niners and the Ravens Super Bowl. I went to Spagnuolo's apartment. It was the first time I'd ever visited a defensive coordinator at his dwelling, at his house.
Dwellings. They call them dwellings if you're a defensive coordinator.
Do they call them dwellings?
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
And he had just been fired from New Orleans because they'd given up. I think they'd set the record for most points allowed or something.
Yeah.
You know, they'd had a horrible season. And he said to me, you know what, Andy, I'm not – he uses people's names a lot. He's very personable. So he said, if he's talking to you, he'd say, you know, Gary, and then he would talk to you. So he said, you know what, Andy, and I'm not making excuses at all. Like, I deserve to be fired. It's, you know, I get how the NFL works. But when you've got a lot of injuries at one position, they had their top five corners had gone down that year. He said, when your defense and your injuries get concentrated at one position, you've got almost zero chance in the NFL. It's just such a game plan, play-specific driven league. So your weaknesses get it. You can't hide your weaknesses very well. Falcons have a lot of injuries up the middle of their defense right now. But Deion Jones is gone. Top two safeties are gone. That's a totally different defense than the one they started with this season now. They're going to have to do some things differently.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately they gave up 534 yards in this one. A couple of nice notes for Drew Brees here. He became the NFL's all-time leader in completions, which is very nice. He rushed for two touchdowns. The game-tying touchdown was a bit ridiculous. He got out on the edge and ended up spinning away from two tacklers, which, again, with a defense at full strength, Drew Brees is probably not spinning away and creating a 7-yard touchdown run there, but it happened. So, and I do just want to mention real quick on the Falcons red zone watch here. They did it again. I mean, they're 8-for-8 in the red zone scoring touchdowns since the opener when they were so terrible. So they've kind of figured it out here. Calvin Ridley had a 75-yard touchdown. I mean, Calvin Ridley just embarrassed PJ Williams in this game. It seems like they're starting to click on offense, and they're doing it just as the defense is falling apart because they have just run out of players.
And I'm guessing that 75-yard touchdown, that's separate from the red zone success you were citing.
That was not part of the red zone success. That is true. Actually, they did get a bit of a cheat red zone success because they had a roughing the kicker call that ended up extending a drive. So they did kind of get stopped.
Speaking of roughing calls.
Well, let's get to that first. I think everyone's seen the play at this point, and I think this is going to be like a weekly thing. Clay Matthews is going to get flagged for roughing the passer, and we're going to have to talk about it on the show. I didn't in the scope of you know, in the context of where we are with the rule and how it's been called, I didn't think this one was crazy. I thought last week was pretty crazy. The one week one was pretty obvious. That wasn't even one of the body weight
calls.
Yeah,
that was a bad
was
play.
Flat out roughing the passer.
Yep.
Last week's call I thought was clearly with the new rule. This week was I thought I'd lean toward calling it considering how it's been called across the league.
So, and I agree with you. I think if it was a good call and a bad rule, I think that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Yep. And I just kind of wonder if it's going to reach a point where they kind of rethink this the way they kind of rethought
the helmet lowering
rule early on. But
it looks right because they could. The question is, will they change the rule? And people will say, "Oh, you can't do that till the after the season." They can do that. They've done that with the helmet rule already. They can change it by the way they call it. Yeah. Should they change a rule? I understand the value of keeping the QBs in there. Green Bay fans, as much as they're angry now, they know that better than anyone. So I understand the spirit of the rule, and my inclination would be to keep it and live with this. But I don't know. I mean, if you get this kind of controversy every week, and now this has always been here. We've always had roughing the passer debates. But now it's turned into an ugly debate, and it's things are going viral, and people are looking for it, and the NFL is starting to look bad in it. The rule maybe becomes counterproductive at some point, because really the whole point of the rule is to make the games more watchable. Keeping the quarterbacks healthy, that's what makes the games watchable. Well, yeah. If you're not allowed to tackle the quarterback, then you do lose a little bit of the watchability. So just something to keep an eye on. I'm with you, though. Matthews might have some adjusting to do in his game in the meantime.
This, by the way, was a Washington win. This was how Washington will win games this year. They jumped out early. They had a 14-0 lead, and they end up hanging on with relative ease. The Packers were kind of within two possessions for a while. A couple of bad Randall Cobb drops, and then he lost a fumble. Rough day for him. Aaron Rodgers, I didn't think looked a whole lot better than he did last week. He came up limping a couple of times during this game. I don't think this knee is going to fall out of the news cycle. Other than that, I mean, this was the Washington game flow that they want. And Adrian Peterson runs for 120 yards and two touchdowns, and he looked really good. he looked good enough.
Yep.
This was a rain, muddy game, and there were a couple of runs where, I mean, he was swift and he was fast, and I wasn't quite sure if it was him or it was like a younger back who had subbed in, but he looks really good right now.
I remember that when Emmitt Smith, I was a Cowboys fan as a kid, and his last few years, Emmitt Smith, I would not admit that he was washing up. I just couldn't take that truth. And they would put in Troy Hambrick. Do you remember Troy Hambrick?
Yes, very well.
And I would feel,
I believe.
That's exactly what it was. Yep, and I would feel pangs of guilt in the back of my mind because I would see Hambrick and get excited that he was in for Emmitt because there was some juice to the run game again.
Yeah.
The running back can actually get through. They say slow to know, fast to go, slow to make your read. You want to let your plays unfold, then do it and hit it and go fast. And Emmitt, at that point, his crew is slow to go and then slow to know, or, you know, he's slow everything. And Troy Hambrick was a fast everything, and I just loved it when he came in. So I know what you mean by maybe they had a younger Peterson then, but Peterson, even though he's the age Emmitt was then when he was washing up, he does not look washed up. Here's it. This whole Washington offense, it all exists between the field numbers. It's all the middle of the field. Peterson's a between the tackles runner. Jordan Reed, Vernon Davis, Chris Thompson, and Jamison Crowder are over the ball receivers. They catch stuff that they wind up right in front of the quarterback's vision. That's the whole offense. So when you're getting ready to play the Redskins, you've got to defend the middle of the field. And if you do, you're going to win the game because they don't have any answers on the outside right now.
Let's go Indianapolis at Philadelphia. The Eagles outlast the Colts in this one. Carson Wentz was back. Limited weaponry in this one, but he made it work. And he, he extended plays a couple of times. He looked kind of like you'd expect he would have looked last year if they had a lot of injuries around him. Like, he made a couple plays. This was a pretty choppy, penalty-filled game, but Wentz ended up making enough plays in the end. Had a beautiful drive to start the game, had a beautiful drive to win it. So looks like Carson Wentz is back, and they're going to get healthy around him, and the Eagles are probably going to be really good again.
And they got their running game going. That helps. 35 runs for 152 yards, 34 of those for 142 by running backs. Clement, and then your guy Smallwood, who you absolutely love, and then an undrafted.
I honestly forgot he was in the league until today.
You used to talk about him all the time, and now he's playing. I always think of whenever I see Wendell Smallwood, I think of Gary Grambling. He got in the action today, and then Josh Adams, an undrafted rookie, got in the action today. So productive running game. We know the Colts, we've said, what we think. We're still judging. They got a lot of young guys right now and a lot of new pieces. But my sense is that they're going to be an overachieving D-line and an up-and-down linebacking unit. And that kind of a defense will get exposed against a high-volume, expansive running scheme like the Eagles. The other thing from this game, Gary, what did you think of the decision to basically bench Andrew Luck for the Hail Mary in favor of Jacoby Brissett?
I mean, Andrew Luck did not look good. And I don't know. I didn't mind it. If you're going to have a guy run around and then possibly take a hit while he's launching the ball to the end zone, I guess you want to put Brissett in harm's way instead of Luck. And if it's just a matter of just chucking the ball into the end zone, I thought Luck looked kind of terrible in this game. I just didn't think he threw the ball well.
They were on the – to me, that's a separate discussion here.
Yeah.
They're on the 46-yard line, the Indy 46-yard line, which means you're probably throwing the ball 60 yards because you're not throwing from the line of scrimmage. You drop back a little bit. So they felt Brissett was their better chance to throw the ball 60, and it's 60 to 70. Keep in mind, because you can go back of the end zone too on a Hail Marys. I mean, you got that whole area to work with. And also a big deal with the Hail Mary is throwing it high. You want to get height under the ball.
Yeah.
The longer it hangs, the better chance you have. It's like playing, well, we talked about that game 500, I think 2 years ago on the
that
podcast.
That you made up,
were unfamiliar. No, and that people, I think, west of the Mississippi must have played. Nobody in the East Coast knows about. I'm fine with what they did. I bet Andrew Luck's fine with it too. Jacoby Brissett has the better arm. If that's the criteria and that's the play you need, in that one instance, Brissett has the better arm. Now, if they're wanting to throw a dig route on a crucial 3rd and 18, they call a timeout and they're going to throw a dig, or they're going to throw that turkey hole throw that John Gruden talks about, those cover two outer holes that Stafford's so good at throwing, and they sub Luck out for that for Brissett, that's a different conversation. That's because that's an arm strength deal, but now you're talking different elements of arm strength rather than just, hey, launch the ball. So I don't think there's anything to this. I understand, though, why Colts fans would have a discussion about it.
Yeah.
So I was fine with the decision.
I didn't even know we were having a discussion about it. I didn't know people were discussing it. It was unusual, but I thought it made perfect sense, even if Andrew Luck was sharp in this game, which, again, as I said, he left a lot of throws out there. He was late on on what should have been a pretty easy touchdown pass. He fired high on a couple other ones. He got a couple of pass interference calls on underthrown balls that sort of worked in his favor, but he was a little off all day. I had high hopes for this one after seeing what Fitzpatrick did to that Eagles defense last week. I thought we might see some vintage Andrew Luck, but not quite there. Might be a little bit longer. Dallas, Seattle, they played. I don't know. I think this game was exactly as I expected it to go. Seahawks got out. They got a couple of big plays. Cowboys had some issues on the back end of that defense, especially when Jeff Heath was out for a little bit. So Seahawks take a couple of big plays, get the lead, get enough from Chris Carson, grinding it out, 32 carries, 102 yards, and the Cowboys just don't have an offense that can play from behind.
They do not. That's it. This Cowboy offense is going to become a story as the season progresses. This is a national televised team. They're always on the big games. This is the Aikman-Buck game for Fox. So it's had the biggest audience of the day for the NFC broadcast or the Fox broadcast. And their paucity of wide receiver talent mixed with their scheme that's not helping their receivers, it's going to continue to create ugly days. And I think it's going to make for some ugly storylines this season. They've got to do more to help their people.
Yeah, this was a 24-13 victory. I mean, Cowboys also turned it over three times in this game. I don't know. It's not getting better. Some nice moments for the Seahawks, though. They got Bobby Wagner back in the lineup. Earl Thomas gets two interceptions. Cam Chancellor was not playing but was there and did the whole whatever they do with the 12 flag before the game. So it was a nice scene in the home opener for the Seahawks, and they get on the board here with a win. Chicago at Arizona. Boy, the Cardinals, man. They get out to the 14-0 lead, and just it was painful watching this one slip away from them. This offense cannot move the ball with any sort of they strive to be doing what the Cowboys are doing right now. The Cardinals are just a bad offensive team. The Bears are pretty good defensively. They're not good offensively, but they're good enough offensively that if you keep on giving them the ball, they're going to eventually score 16 points, which is what they got to win this one.
I feel like you just took care of all. You did it. You did all the work on that one. You said it's what was the word you used for the Cardinals offense at the very beginning back there?
Oh boy! Oh,
sad,
I can't remember.
Or
that was
depressing.
That was so
whatever
long
it is, all right. Sad and depressing is what comes to mind. My last two Friday nights have been spent watching the Cardinals' offense on film, and I imagine my next one will too. I'll probably get to this game Friday night on film, and I'm already dreading it.
It's they went to Josh Rosen down the stretch. So, look, Sam Bradford.
Oh well,
that'll make it okay.
That'll make it more fun at least. What did he do?
He played the last drive didn't really count. That was just sort of a desperation thing. But he did, once they were down 16-14, after Bradford had turned it over for a third time, he scrambled a little bit and Khalil Mack knocked the ball out. They went to Rosen. I would think they're not going back to Bradford, but who knows with this team.
You buried the lead on this one story from this game is that the Cardinals are probably changing quarterbacks. We're seeing these teams, these rookie QBs, they find their way into the lineup. We said it
they do.
All offseason. These guys are going to play. And now the next up is Josh Rosen. That leaves who's left then? That's Lamar Jackson will play at some point, I think.
Yeah.
Is he the only one left? Yeah, Allen's
in.
They're
the
all
rounders,
in there already. Yeah, see how that works? We told you so.
It's something like that. I will say that the one moment that was driving me crazy from this game, of all the awful things the Cardinals did offensively after getting an early lead, they came out of the 2-minute warning with facing a 3rd-and-2. They did not have David Johnson in the lineup, which just stunned me. I mean, why did you just pay David Johnson if you're not going to give him the ball on a 3rd-and-2? They went with the rookie, Chase Edmonds, who lost 3 yards on the carry and Rosen was picked on the next play, and that was it. 16-14 Bears. Andy, it's time for the lightning round. Tennessee at Jacksonville. This was, man, good for the Titans. I mean, they were hurt all summer. They're trying to sort things out with a new defense, and everyone was banged up. They're trying to find a healthy quarterback out there. They beat the Jaguars 9-6, all field goals. It was ugly, but Titans are 2-1. They're leading that division right now.
Gutting out victory. I mean, there's something to be said for that. Marcus Mariota, it wasn't pretty, but he earned a lot of teammates' respect today, which is good. He's going to need that because I think he's in for an up-and-down season. He's making some adjustments to his game. I didn't think he threw the ball well at all in week one. To go out there and play hurt and earn a unique kind of respect from your team, and you're going to be a defensive-minded team this year, that's a big deal. And that defense, Gary, for Tennessee is playing very well. Kevin Byard is having a great season at safety, and their corners are doing what you thought they'd do. And the other thing that's been interesting to watch, this is the Dean Pease effect, their new D coordinator who's working with Mike Vrabel. They're playing a lot of cover two, and they're getting to cover two in really unique ways. They're not just keeping safeties over the top, cornerbacks underneath. They've got guys in different spots. Safety might be a linebacker, cornerback might be over the top, whatever it is. They're doing some really unique cover two configurations there.
Denver at Baltimore. The Ravens beat the Broncos. Broncos, I'm telling you, this is deja vu for the Broncos. Last year, they looked good in their first two at home, and then they go east, get beat by the Bills. This year, it's they win their first two, then they go east, get beat by the Ravens. So I don't know. I got a lot of concerns about this Broncos team.
That's a good memory that you have there. Yeah, and how about Joe Flacco? 25 out of 40, 277 yards and a touchdown at a 44-yard completion. So maybe our Lamar Jackson thing, we certainly need to pump the brakes. Flacco and that offense, it's a better-looking offense this year than it was last year. It feels like there's a little bit of an identity for the Ravens.
Yeah, Flacco's going to be the starter for the rest of the year. I think that's not really
in
doubt. I think, well, I mean, look, if they collapse and they're sitting at like 5-9 at some point, maybe you run Lamar out there for the last two games. But I think this is Flacco's team for the rest of the season.
We'll see. They've got a defense good enough to keep them in it, so you're probably right. But I'm telling, these rookie QBs, they find their way into the lineup. That's how the NFL's set up now.
And I was going to say, no C.J. Mosley in this one for the Ravens. So a nice win with a shorthanded team. Panthers knock off the Bengals. The Bengals have lost a game. You know, Norv Turner, all offseason, people would ask him, like, oh, what's Christian McCaffrey's workload going to be? And he'd say something ridiculous like 25 to 30 touches a game. And today, Christian McCaffrey got 30 touches. He had a career day, certainly on the ground, 28 carries for 184 yards, even though Cam got the two touchdown runs. But this was, they ran for 230 yards. This was how the Panthers want to win games.
We wondered all year what will they look like under Norv Turner. And what we said is they have to have a running game that looks like what it has the last few years. They got to continue what Mike Shula, their old offensive coordinator the previous 5 years, what he was doing, and continue to have an expansive, multi-dimensional ground game with a lot of moving pieces and Cam Newton at the center of it. And part of the reason we said that, and that's not just because it fits Newton really well, it's because that kind of running game fits McCaffrey well as well. He's very shifty in confined areas. He can set up his blocks. He's got vision. He's that kind of runner. And we saw that today. This is a very – sometimes it's not just that you win, it's the way you win. This is a very encouraging the-way-you-win kind of game for Carolina.
Dolphins. My Dolphins are 3-0. They come back in this one. They were down 17-7 late in the third quarter and get some big plays in this game. I mean, they Tannehill had touchdown passes of 34 to Kenny Stills in the first half, then 18 to Jakeem Grant, then 52 to Grant, and 74 to Albert Wilson to seal it. But they get the 28-20 win over the Raiders. I'm excited about the Dolphins.
You know what? Their receiving core has been playing well. Albert Wilson, I didn't remember him in Kansas City being kind of a gadget player, but that's what he's been for Miami. He's been their gadget guy. I would have guessed, I would have bet all my money this year that Jakeem Grant would be the gadget guy, because I saw Grant down the stretch last season and thought, my goodness, he's tiny. He's very tiny, but he's a form of Tyreek Hill. And Jakeem Grant has been out there contributing as a rotational number 3/number 4 wideout, but they've been using him just as a normal guy. Like, he's just part of the system. He's a regular wideout who happens to be the height of most of people's mothers. But then Albert Wilson's a guy that lines up in the backfield and is getting the gadget plays. And Gase has done a great job with that. Kenny Stills is kind of emerging as, he's not a true number one, but I think he's becoming that in their system. I'm kind of getting bullish on the Dolphins too, Gary.
It was, look, it was a lot of big plays. Besides that, you had Albert Wilson throw a 52-yard pass. But they had, look, they had 18 completions in this game and for 341 yards and 4 touchdowns. Big plays are what are going to win games in today's NFL, and the Dolphins are proving that they can get them at least early in the season here. 2-game lead in the AFC East. Everyone else is tied for second there. Bills and Patriots are tied for second.
And they've got the Patriots next week too, don't they? So they've got potentially they could build a commanding lead. If they win that game next week, they're
it's
three
at
up
New
on
England.
The Patriots
and look, that's
with
a,
the tiebreaker. Yeah, but they played them well in the past.
It's a big
at New England.
I was just going to say, it's a big if, but Gase has always played those Patriots teams well. And Patriots, as we saw, still shorthanded at this point. Still not going to have Edelman. Probably not going to have Josh Gordon at full speed. Might still have the injury issues on defense. So that's that one is suddenly a very interesting game. One more game we want to touch on. It actually did not happen today. It happened Thursday. Andy, I just wanted to get your quick reaction to the Baker-Mayfield mania on Thursday night.
Have you ever seen so much enthusiasm for one guy? Like, I mean, he is the talk of the league right now.
No, I'm actually going to say no. Look, we every Monday and Tuesday we have these meetings where whoever had a good game that previous week, oh, we got to do a story on this guy. We got to do a story. This is one of the few times where it was like, oh, legitimately, like, we got to, something's happening here.
Our SI.com homepage, not our MMQB page, not the NFL section of SI, SI.com home for on Friday, the top three stories on it were all Baker Mayfield stories. I felt left out. I thought, why aren't they rerunning my Tyrod Taylor should get benched story? This is that was the one that called it all in the first place. Nobody
you
paid
did,
attention
you,
except
you
the Browns. They paid attention.
Yep, you called it last
Although,
week. Well, Tyrod
kind
went out with
Taylor
a concussion,
got knocked
so.
Out, but that yeah they made this all. And obviously, you want, I mean, his health is what matters. That's what's important from the human side of it. But from the football side of it, the decision got made easily for Hugh Jackson. He would have made that change at halftime anyway.
You would think so. But then again, you would have thought he would have had Baker Mayfield under center week one. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
No kidding.
I don't know. What did you think of
offense,
Baker, though?
Yeah, I thought he looked great. Very decisive. You know, the ball comes out of his hand better than I would have guessed. He's a better raw throw. If I didn't know his size, and I just could – if he were just an outline of a person, a blurry outline, and you're just watching how the ball flies, I'd never guess that's a 6-foot thrower. I mean, I like the way he threw the football. There's a decisiveness to him. Now, that might hurt him when a defense has a chance to scout him a little bit. We'll find out. Mm-hmm. He plays the Raiders next week. That'll be his first actual start. But he injected that. I'm telling you, it's a better designed offense than in the past. It's pretty well designed. Hugh Jackson's a good offensive schemer. And we saw what it can do when someone comes out and runs the offense crisply as designed.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And look, I watch a lot of Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma, as most people did. I thought Thursday night there was more zip on his ball than I ever remember there being at Oklahoma. And maybe it's just a matter of, I don't know, the adrenaline plus maybe he just is a little bit bigger. He just physically more matured a little bit.
I don't know. What's interesting is, not many people get stronger arms once they get – their arm strength doesn't improve when you get in the NFL. That does not happen very often. One guy who it has happened for, it gets cited as the exception to that rule, is Drew Brees. And I think Baker Mayfield's career is going to come down to how well he can mimic Drew Brees ultimately. And I, the better he does, the better his career will be. He's going to have to be that style of guy.
Yeah. Well, that was an exciting start. I mean, look, he was ahead of Sam Darnold coming into the league. So I'm not shocked that he outplayed Sam Darnold in this game. But regardless of all the sort of circus atmosphere around it, Baker Mayfield looked really good on Thursday, and we will probably talk about him a whole lot more on the Deep Dive show coming up. I think we're actually going to talk Browns Raiders, which we would not have been doing if Baker Mayfield was not going to play quarterback. Thing of the week, Andy. What is your favorite
favorite
player, favorite moment, favorite play? What do you got?
Well, you better go first. I will be honest. I'm treating this like the award section we used to do, and I forget all about it until it comes up. Let me think about mine. It is easier, and I'm still not participating very well here. Let me think of mine while you talk slowly here. I feel like when you go to a restaurant and the waiter shows up and everybody ready to order. It's like, yeah, well, you go first and I'll be ready.
Oh, I'm supposed to order food at this restaurant? I thought I was just going to sit quietly at this table. All right, I'm giving my thing of the week is Sean McDermott. Stepping back, Sean McDermott will always get crapped on for the whole Nathan Peterman thing. I get why they were tempted by Nathan Peterman. Nathan Peterman has looked really good against sort of shell defenses and in garbage time and preseason games, stuff like that, and they put him out there in more live action, and it hasn't gone well. I don't know if it will ever go well with Nathan Peterman. But McDermott will forever take heat for that, because any idiot sitting on his couch or typing on his phone can say, what an idiot, he played the guy who threw all the interceptions. Sean McDermott has gotten more out of less talent than any coach in football over the last two seasons. We were talking in the office all week, are the Bills going to go 0-16? This Bills team is significantly less talented than the Browns were a year ago. They went to Minnesota, a team that has just exponentially more talent. I don't think exponentially even makes sense in this context, but they have so much more talent than the Bills. And they went out there and handed it to them the week after Vontae Davis walks out at halftime and all that nonsense. So Sean McDermott got those guys playing. Last year he took a 4 or 5 win caliber team to the playoffs. He's always going to be known for the Peterman thing, but that guy's doing an unbelievable job in Buffalo.
I agree with you. They played hard in the second half last week, too, against the Chargers. They played really hard in that game. They were the better team in the second half. They lost the game because they were so bad in the first half. But I agree with everything you've said about Sean McDermott. My thing of the week, this is going to shock you. I'm going Rams special teams and John Fossil's group. Bones, they call him, as a coach. Yeah, the Rams special teams, they had a punt block for a touchdown today against the Chargers. They get more big plays out of their special teams than anyone in the NFL right now.
They do, and that was, I have to say, it was kind of a mismatch, Rams special teams versus Chargers special teams going into that game. But I was like, oh, you know, whenever you think that about special teams, it just ends up being a wash and it doesn't matter. But we saw it. That was a touchdown. They got a touchdown off of that. So good for John Fossil. Good coach. Good man. Chargers
special
teams.
People love him. Yeah, people love him.
Chargers special teams kill me on a weekly basis now. I just don't understand how they're so bad at it. On that note, that's going to be a wrap. We will be back Thursday with a deep dive show. But for now, thanks to today's sponsors, HelloFresh and NFL Game Pass. Without them, they wouldn't let us do the show. So please support them the way they support us. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. And thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston. All the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You really are the best. Like I said, deep dive show on Thursday. We have the mini mailbag. Send the questions in. talkback@themmqb.com. Or you can send it to Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGremling_SI. Or we're both on Facebook. You can send notes there. Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr are joining Albert Breer on Wednesday for Albert Breer's show. And of course, I'll be with Jimmy Traina and Scott Grambling on the MMQB Gambling Show on Friday. Listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.